everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you in the driver's seat, along with my buddy John on the other side of the glass. We are off and running. Second day of July, Tuesday, July 2nd, 2024. We mark 13 and a half years with our radio program yesterday, so we're midway through our 14th year, coming to you from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, part of the growing presence of Bustos Media here in town, five radio stations under one roof, including our latest acquisition, great music station, The Drive. But this one's 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice. We have our worldwide live listening and all of our podcasts going back 13 and a half years at buckmastershow.com. Our live line for our telephone interviews is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Of course, the 4th of July is Thursday, and this is a very challenging time of year, to say the least, for all pet owners. Pima Animal Care Center Director Monica Dangler joins me now to kick things off. Monica, how are you?
How are you? Thanks for having me today.
Well, it's very serendipitous to have you because we've got several pieces of business to take care of that can really help our four-legged friends, including the wonderful animal that you brought with you to the studio today. Who do we have with us?
Yeah, today we brought Cadmium.
Cadmium.
I know. I didn't name him. That's
sweet.
Just
dog, yeah. Though.
Yeah, he's great. He's about 2 years old. He came as a stray, so we didn't know a lot about him.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and that's kind of typical. But great dog, right?
Love his nice coloring. It's like kind of a buckskin color,
yeah,
like this tan,
real honey color.
Yeah, like a honey color.
Yeah.
Great dog. Here in the studio with us, this is a dog that is mellow, to say the least. We got to get this dog out of the shelter, though.
Yeah, and right now's the perfect
March?
Time. He's
came
been here
in March?
Since March.
Oof.
But take him out as a foster so we can learn a little bit more about him. We found that when we send out pets for foster,
mm-hmm.
they get adopted within days, typically, after they return to the shelter, because we know so much about them.
Yes.
As opposed to just like, oh, they're really nice and aren't they pretty?
Yeah.
So it's the perfect time to do that.
All right. We've got a stack of stuff to cover with you, Monica. And we want to begin with the fact, of course, the 4th of July, you're doing your best to bring the shelter numbers down to a manageable level, because you know the intake on Friday will be like it always is, hundreds of animals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're trying to get down to 400 by the 4th.
Mm-hmm.
And to do that, we're offering some incentives, right? So you can come adopt or you can foster. And if you foster, you qualify to get $5 a day incentive through Friends of Pack.
Great.
As well as crates and things like that to take the dogs home for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that serves two purposes. It helps us have room in the shelter for that influx of dogs the week after 4th of July. But also, it helps us get really great notes on the dogs that we have in our care that we maybe don't know anything about, because the majority of the dogs come in as strays, so we don't know a lot about them.
Yeah, you took in over 400 dogs, pretty much three-quarters of the 400 dogs, and then some cats in there as well after the 4th last year. This is always such a challenging time. Let's talk about what a pet owner should do to prepare.
Yeah, so the number one thing to do
mm-hmm.
is expect your pet to get lost, so have an ID tag on them. If you can't get an ID tag, which you can, by the way, get those for free at, mm-hmm. at PAC anytime during business hours, thanks to Friends of PAC, but if you can't make it down, you can't get an ID tag, you can always use write with a Sharpie marker on the collar. If the collar is a dark color, then get some duct tape or something like that and mm-hmm. write your number on it and then put it on, you know, wrap it around the collar so people can see that number. So mm-hmm. if they get lost, they can be reunited with you quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But prior to getting lost, let's pretend they're not going to, right? It's about keeping them safe, keep them indoors. If you have an interior room, you know, think of what you do during a tornado, put them in a bathroom, somewhere where there's not a lot of windows or noise. Put on some nice, relaxing classical music.
Yeah.
Be mindful, because during the 4th of July, there's lots of overtures and stuff being played that are a little loud and scary. Mm-hmm. And give them, you know, a frozen Kong or some type of frozen treat to keep themselves occupied during the time when fireworks are going to be shot off. And, you know, there's our scheduled fireworks, but then there's the unplanned neighborhood fireworks. And
yeah, I hate those.
Yeah, and they're a lot, so you should just be prepared at all times, because that's when we see a lot of those dogs go missing, as somebody didn't, they had them outside, they weren't expecting a fireworks because it was the 7th, and somebody shot off fireworks unexpectedly.
And somebody was going to find the dog maybe in the neighborhood, maybe ask around with your neighbors.
Absolutely.
Because I think you've said before on this program that it's surprising how many of these strays are actually just neighborhood dogs.
Yeah, and right, if you lose a dog or you find a dog, it's always great to go talk to your neighbors first. Mm-hmm. Granted, in this situation with fireworks, and we see it with monsoons and thunderstorms, typically dogs tend to run farther than they would normally when they just meander out of the gate because they're afraid for their lives.
Yes.
So that's why the name tag, the ID with a phone number that you're going to answer is so important, because there is a chance that they will go a little bit farther than they normally would.
You know, with those 400, and I think it was the Arizona Daily Star has a piece today in the paper, 433 pets last year. I'm just curious how many of those, roughly percentage-wise, had microchips. Is that still, unfortunately, a rarity?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have the exact numbers of how many come in with microchips, but it's pretty minimal, right?
Maybe 10 to 15%.
About 15% of the dogs that come in as strays get reunited with their owners, and about half of those typically have microchips that are registered with current contact information. So there might be 30% that come in with microchips, but they're not registered, the information's not current. The voicemail box is full. The phone has been disconnected. So there's a lot of different pieces to that. But microchips are always a good secondary defense. Mm-hmm. So if their name tag fell off, right, and they come to the shelter, that's something we can check. But you need to make sure to keep that information updated. And anybody can do that at 24petconnect.com. It's free. And that's where we register all of our pets, and it uploads to, oh gosh, about 30 different databases.
24
Pet Connect.
Pet Connect. Mm-hmm. And we do want to talk about your event, a free microchip event on Wednesday.
Yeah,
tomorrow
from 11:30 to 1:30. Come on by. We'll be doing as many microchips as we can in those 2 hours. Mm-hmm. If you're there between 11:30 and 1:30, we'll get your dog microchipped, and we'll get them into our system. So should they go lost sometime in this next week during the 4th of July or during monsoons, we can reconnect them with you.
Getting the shelter down to 400 dogs has been a challenge, because you've been running at beyond capacity, haven't you?
Yeah, we were around 470, but then the monsoons started a little early this season.
Yep.
So we saw an uptick in dogs coming in, right, because we had a storm, and then about a week later, another storm. So we've seen an uptick in dogs coming in, because they're getting out of fences that have been blown open, or the rushing water has carved out a space so they can sneak out under their gate. So we've seen a lot more dogs coming in pre-4th of July, where normally we don't see these monsoons until around now or a little bit after 4th of July.
To run the shelter in an efficient manner, which you do, it takes a lot of people, doesn't it, and volunteers?
Oh, it takes a lot, yeah.
And what about volunteering? Are those opportunities available?
Absolutely. And we try to make it as low barrier and as easy as possible for people to volunteer. You can just go on our website. There is a application that's online you fill out. After you fill out that, you'll get a invitation to watch the volunteer orientation. So again, you can just do that from the comfort of your own home. And once that's completed, you'll set up a time to come in and do a tour of the shelter and ask questions, and then go from there. You can start volunteering. Some people have started volunteering within a day of applying. So you can do it as quickly or as slowly as you'd like. And you can do just about anything.
You can read to the dogs.
You can read to the dogs. You can walk dogs. You can play with cats. You can do administrative functions for us if you're like, you just want to help, but you don't want to hang out with the animals. Mm-hmm. There's so many things that you can do.
Yeah, if you love animals, and a lot of people in this town do, sounds like there's some great opportunities.
Absolutely.
So again, summarize for us in our final minute, what are some of the things to keep in mind this 4th?
Yeah, this 4th, get a put your phone number on your dog's collar so they can get back. If you don't have your dog microchipped, stop on by tomorrow, 11:30 to 1:30, and then make sure your microchip information is updated. And then final, if you'd like to foster, today's the last day to foster to qualify for that $5 a day foster incentive through Friends of PAC.
And let's talk about the animal that you brought in again, because let's try to get that animal home.
Yeah, Cadmium. He's a cute 2-year-old boy. Honey colored.
Come here.
He's snoozing. He's snoring. I'm surprised you don't hear
him. Yeah, I gave him a treat that you gave me to give to him, and he devoured it. There he is. Yeah.
But he's
good
a real
dog.
Nice, friendly guy.
Yeah.
Hasn't been a stranger. Pretty low key.
Uh-huh.
So come on down, meet him, take him home as a foster, or adopt him.
Just say that you want Cadmium, or the dog that Bill was talking about on the radio.
That's right.
All right. Thank you, Monica.
No, thank you.
All right. We'll take a break right here. Shelley Fishman is waiting in the wings and he's giving me an emphatic thumbs up. That means good things on the market. So we'll be right back with Shelley.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Quality of Life Medical Center has served Tucson residents for more than 20 years. We understand the key to a long, healthy life is not just about getting the right medical treatment, but it's also about feeling good mentally and emotionally. Whether you're looking for preventative care or treatment for a specific condition, we're here for you. And we are accepting new patients for primary care, pain management, and sexual health. Please visit QLMC.com to request an appointment. Quality of Life. Our name says it all.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Shelly Fishman is a financial advisor and business consultant in Tucson, Arizona. Contact Shelly via buckmastershow.com or directly via email at saf824@earthlink.net.
Wow, Shelly, that dog that Monica brought in, cadmium, oh, nice coloring, but you said that dog is a real special dog.
That's a special dog.
Yeah.
A lot of... A lot of bulldog or or boxer or something in that dog. That's a muscular dog that needs a lot of exercise.
Sweet
as can be.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Things are going pretty well on the market today as we get ready for a shortened work week. I guess the market will be, of course, closed on the 4th, but they'll be open for a shortened session Friday. Yeah. But we're doing well.
Yeah, we're up about 100 points on the Dow today. Started off kind of weak, but I guess... And I didn't see this. You did.
Yeah.
That Powell made some remarks from Portugal.
Yep.
And he said, you know, everything's doing okay, but we got to have more evidence before I tell you exactly what I'm going to do. That's a non-announcement. But that's okay. Apparently, it made the market feel good enough to turn around what was a lackluster morning and is now a pretty good day.
He could speak from an icebreaker up near Antarctica or down in Antarctica, and it would be news. But when he speaks, usually the market goes kind of down. But today it's doing well. Well, he indicated that we're getting close.
Last week, the inflation indicator that he likes to use ticked down about a tenth of a point.
Okay.
So now it's like at 2.6%. Instead of 2.7%. There's some room to go. As you know, from my perspective, the amount of damage being done by the higher interest rates the amount of damage being done by inflation.
By waiting.
Yeah.
So we are in the midst of an election year. In fact, we're only months now away from early voting, which will begin in October. What's an investor? How should an investor look at an election year?
Well, so the
not just any election year, but every 4 year cycle,
the presidential
election.
Cycle.
Yeah.
So the official answer to that question is
it depends.
It depends.
Okay.
But more than that, if you take a look at recent history, we find that there are some trends, but they're not reliable. As a matter of course, unless you know you are a high risk investor who wants to make some calls about what you think the market will do in relationship to various possibilities going forward on president, vice president, etc., then don't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Just go along normally. However, when that question occurred to me. This morning I started doing some research and I went back to 1992. I was going to go back further than that, but it didn't seem to make sense. To take a look at what the percentage change is from July 1st, and I picked that as a date only because it's, yesterday. From July 1st to Election Day, and then from Election Day to the inauguration of the elected president. And I came up with some interesting stuff. Hard to find trends here, but for instance, in 1992, the incumbent was George H.W. Bush. He had a recession during his term, and so there are always some mitigating circumstances. But from July 1st to the election day, the markets, and I use the S&P 500 here, went up about 5%.
Hmm.
From Election Day to Inauguration Day, it was flat.
Huh.
Markets were flat. And then, interestingly, the winner of that election was Bill Clinton. And from his inauguration to July 1st of the first year of his term, market was up 56%.
Oh, my goodness.
To give you, in his second term, from his inauguration day to the close to the July 1st of that year, 2000, the market was up 63%. So Clinton was a very good president for the markets and for the economy in general.
I had no idea. Wow.
The winner of that election in 2000 was George W. Bush. And in the first 6 months of his term, market was down 7%. I ran those kinds of numbers in his second term. The market, actually, the first year of his second term, the market was up about 4%. So I ran all these numbers, and I'm not going to go through them because that's a formula for going to sleep. But then I ran some averages. So the average gains and losses in the S&P 500 in the first year of the terms of presidents, all presidents from 1992 through 2024, is 38% gain.
Wow.
That's the average gain. The average gain or loss when the Democrat won that election is 55%.
Hmm.
The average gain or loss when the Republican wins is 11%.
Interesting.
In the first year. When I take a look at the similar numbers from the July 1st of the election year to the election day, the numbers are 1% average gain. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking to make decisions between now and election day, the numbers don't support anything unusual there.
Hold the course. Yeah.
And the average gain in that case for Democrats is 3%, and the average gain for Republicans is -3%. So between July and election day, the Republican presidents have a loss. And then when I take a look at the percentage change from election day to inauguration day, the average gain is 2%. For Dems, it's 5%, and for Republicans, it's -1%.
Hmm.
So if this span from 1992 to 2024 is any indicator of anything, it would tell you that if the Dems win, you're going to do better than when the Republicans win. And that's very consistent with the work I've done to take a look at everything from the end of World War II in terms of GDP gain, market gain, unemployment, etc. The Dems just have a better record on the economy than the Republicans do. I've said this time and time again, it's counterintuitive because the Republicans will tell you they're better for the economy.
Mm-hmm.
They're not.
Mm. Yeah, I know you in the past have gone back to 1945 and looked at...
I've run those numbers.
Yeah.
And interestingly, because I was looking at mitigating circumstances here, and we were looking for what could affect these numbers, and... The George H.W. Bush term had a recession. The George W. Bush term, first term, had a recession. The George W. Bush second term had the Great Recession.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Trump term also had a recession and the pandemic. During Democratic presidencies, at least in this time period, no recessions.
Mm.
So again, I can't tell you what the causality there is. Mm-mm. I think it's because Democratic policies tend to be more long-term focused.
Mm-hmm.
Businesses like that.
Mm-hmm.
But what they will tell you is we need tax cuts and less regulation.
Right.
And when they get that, the markets don't respond.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just my observation. The numbers are what they are. But I scratch my head and I say, you know, if I had those numbers in my favor and I were running for office, I'd be waving this.
Yeah, I think somebody
spreadsheet
ought to hire you
to,
to do a campaign pitch there, because this is information that is, as you say, counterintuitive.
It's counterintuitive.
Yeah. So generally, investors need to meet with their investing counselor.
Absolutely. They meet with their advisor at least once, but you know, ideally two or three times a year.
Yeah.
To review where things are, especially when you get the kind of volatility that we seem to have had recently. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, last year was a pretty good year for the markets. This year is turning out to be pretty good, maybe at least an average year. 2 years ago was horrible.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to know how your portfolio is reacting to the volatility. And then, you know, if you don't do it yourself, read the business pages every day, you know, look at CNBC or whatever, it is the job of your investment advisor to at least know what's going on. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not suggesting that all investment advisors are good stock pickers.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't a good stock picker. I never picked stocks. Mm-hmm. I always relied on the exchange-traded funds for indices. So I would invest my money and my clients' money around the indices so that if one, you know, company or two companies that, you know, were having a bad year, you're kind of insulated from that.
Yeah.
In fact, the funny thing about the S&P 500 right now is with all the good things that it's doing, it's only 10 stocks in that 500 that are doing that well.
Yeah.
So unless you've got the 10 stocks, you know, which is why I think ETFs for, you know, for indices, get a good range of indices, get good mix of bond and equity indices, and then work with your advisor to outline a strategy and stick with it.
Okay, Shelley Fishman, have a great 4th of July.
Thanks, you too.
Okay.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Second day of July already. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things. Zocalo Village Studios. If you're looking to put some beautiful color into your garden, your summer garden, now would be a perfect time to go over to Green Things. It looks like we've got a little bit of a pause in the early summer thunderstorm season, so we'll put some things in the ground, and then a week or so, I hope it's not a week, but it could be, before we get some rain again, they'll be all ready to go for you. 3384 East River Road by the Rito River. GreenThingsAZ.com and their sister business, which is doing so well, Zocalo Village, all those beautiful imported things, including the beautiful imported pottery from all over the world, including the Talavera pottery from Mexico. They've got it there. ZocaloVillage.com. They're in their 53rd year of business, and they're open daily. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. It's always great to welcome back to our show University of Arizona agronomist Dr. Jeff Silvertooth. He's our contributor on agriculture. He's a professor and extension specialist in agronomy and soil science at the University of Arizona Department of Environmental Science, which is part of the College of Agriculture, Life, and Environmental Sciences at the U of A. And Jeff has been at the university since 1987. Professor Silvertooth has been recognized as a fellow for both the American Society of Agronomy and Soil Science Society of America. In other words, he knows what he's talking about. Hey, Jeff.
Hello, Bill. How are you?
Very good. I'm doing pretty well. And I've got a stack of stuff, as usual, for you. A lot of water news. Why don't we begin with, we're hearing so much about foreign interests controlling parts and many would say a growing segment of Arizona agriculture. Is it something that we need to be worried about?
I don't think so, but it's good to be aware of it, for sure. And that's why I think what's happening here right now, it's kind of a shock effect for a lot of people. They didn't realize this, but there's foreign investments, in many aspects of our American society. Agricultural land is one of them.
A lot of folks, though, are pointing the finger at these foreign agriculture interests that they are draining our precious Arizona groundwater, Jeff.
Well, we have a issue, first of all, with groundwater regulation, really the lack thereof. Of course, the 1980 Groundwater Management Act put the AMA's active management areas in place, primarily in urban areas. So you look at this corridor from Tucson, Pinal County, up to Phoenix, Maricopa County, Meniere's Prescott, and basically the concentrated population centers. They've been regulated since 1980 with the Groundwater Management Act, but the rest of the state is not under any regulation. That's they're in an irrigation non-expansion area. There's just a few of those, but for the most part, it's basically essentially 19th century water law.
That is so hard to believe.
Well,
that we're with the sustainable, keeping things sustainable and water being a precious resource.
Right.
But we're really, it's the Wild West.
It is.
A lot of Arizona.
It is. And you mentioned at the onset that I've been here since 1987.
Yeah.
That wasn't the start of statehood, but it's long enough to get a feel for the state of Arizona. And living in the West, a lot of Western states, Arizona being emblematic of that, there's a lot of people have that kind of, try to support and maintain that kind of frontier spirit, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Generationally speaking, it hasn't been that long. It's a relatively young state. So we're at a time where we need to make some changes. There's been a lot of effort going on at the legislature this year to try to develop new groundwater management legislation that would help regulate these communities. And that's where you run into the problem. There's a lot of people that just don't want regulation. But we're at a point where we really are going to have to if we want to try to conserve these resources. So we're at an interesting junction here in Arizona, and this is issues with what I think you're referring to, the Fondo Monte Farms out in La Paz County, with the Saudi Arabians.
Saudi Arabian interests.
They've drawn a lot of interest and a lot of ire from some people in Arizona. The fact of the matter is they weren't breaking any laws. Mm-hmm. But the fact also is that they were pumping groundwater. We recognize the limited, the finite resource that groundwater is being drawn from in most cases around the state, and our need to tighten that up and figure it out. So they became a target. And unfortunately, that's happened to them. But on the good side, it helps us recognize that we have a need to establish better laws, rules, regulations for managing our groundwater for sustainability and future generations. You're right on that.
There were all sorts of proposed bills during this session dealing with water. But
right.
Guess what? By the time the budget came through, most of that had been in the rearview mirror because of what we're told now is a budget crisis in the state of Arizona.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, definitely. And, you know, you also have, you know, these are contentious issues.
Yeah.
And you have, well, you know, just the nature of our, you know, political landscape, a conservative Republican House and a Senate, and you have a Democratic governor. There's not always agreement on how we ought to approach this. But the good news is I'm not directly party to those discussions, but close enough that I kind of have an ear to the ground with what's going on there, like a lot of folks. And there's discussions still that are taking place. So it's still ongoing. There's still some discussion about possibly they could have a special session in the legislature.
To deal with water.
Right. Uh-huh. With groundwater, groundwater regulation. And the parties are having these discussions. And what I've heard, and I haven't been party directly to them, but they're making progress. If they can work out a deal, there's some discussion about calling a special session just like for one day to come in and vote on this legislation. And that's part of the difficulty there. It's a campaign year. It's election year. So a lot of these legislators want to get out and campaign. You know, they're eager to do that.
Yeah.
But there's that tug of war. Sooner or later, we're going to have to deal with this.
Jeff Silvertooth is with us for his monthly visit to the Buckmaster Show. We're talking water. I just had a longtime listener just sent me a message. It's not just the groundwater that is regulated back to kind of the 19th century mining, Jeff, as well.
They use water. They're another one of those big industries.
But they go back to the
19th century.
Yeah, yeah, 70s for that mining law.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are several. That's a good point from the listener.
Is.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Because you get the, I'm not an attorney either, but you get into this stuff and you realize the stuff being the regulations of our natural resources. And you recognize here in Arizona, we have a lot of these things that are somewhat, here in the 21st century, they appear to be antiquated for us. But, you know, just going back again to my 40 years experience here, this state has more than doubled in size. And, you know, there's all the concomitant pressures that come on with that. I think we're pushing 7.4 million people in the state right now. And so there's a lot of pressures from that as well. That's another question that we have is just, you know, how are we going to develop some plans about Arizona living in the desert Southwest that are sustainable for the future? Agriculture comes in to be an important factor with that. Mining does, our industries do as well. Good points.
It's curious with your experience, you've seen so many changes in agriculture, and I wonder since 1987 when you came to the state, how many of these family operations have just decided, I'm going to sell my land and have that land developed, sell it to a developer. And it's probably a pretty good percentage when you think about the Tucson-Phoenix corridor.
Absolutely. It's a high percentage.
High percentage.
There have been several waves of economic strife, and that's usually what kind of causes some fallout. People go out of business. You know, people sometimes forget these farms are businesses, and economic hard times has a tendency to, kind of sort them out a little bit, so to speak. And also, too, the big booms that have happened with regard to development. A good case in point would be right up, well, Pinal County or here in Pima County. During the booms, the real estate booms, the economic booms in the 90s, a lot of that land along corridor of I-10 was sold here in Pima County, like around the Marana Valley, between there and Picacho Peak. And that land has since, well, then the boom kind of recited, and the land was then leased back to farmers. Now it's being built up. And there's a lot of that that's happened in Pinal County as well, and all throughout Maricopa County. So they've displaced a lot of these farms that have gone out of business, picked up that land. And so we see an increasing consolidation of agricultural enterprises, the businesses, the operations, more land under the hands of fewer people. Now, we still have mostly family farms in Arizona, even though you would say they're large commercial farms. That doesn't mean, and they all might be incorporated for legal tax structure, but they're still family farms. But this is a function that's happening all over the country as, in agriculture as well. It's a concern to a lot of folks, but my concern is how do we find the replacement population to keep that expertise in the field? Because you just don't literally grab somebody off the street to go do this stuff any more than we'd send them into, you know, manage a hospital.
And sometimes the kids don't want to take over the farm, do they?
Right. No,
Family considerations, that for whatever reason, that some of the property that's been for generations, but you come up across a generation that doesn't want anything to do with agriculture.
That happens, absolutely. And, you know, they have upper opportunities in our society today, and it's kind of a function of the increasing urbanization that's going on. My family's a good example of it. You know, I didn't grow up on a farm per se, worked on farms since I was 12. But, you know, people began, after World War II particularly, began to migrate to the cities. Arizona is a good example of that as well. We're a large open state, over 90% urban of our population base. California, same thing, over 95% urban base. That's a trend that's gone across the country, been true across the country, this urbanization, people leaving the farms, leaves a few less and less out there to manage, and we need more and more food all the time. And that's where we get these large farms.
The demand for food is not going to go away.
No, that doesn't go away.
Got to eat. All right, Jeff Silvertooth sticks around. We've got a second segment with Jeff right after we take a break.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Pima Association of Governments, the Greater Tucson Region's metropolitan planning organization, is developing a new long-range transportation plan for the next 30 years. Shape your transportation future and tell us your transportation project and funding priorities. Take the survey at pagregion.com/2055. That's pagregion.com/2055.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding.
please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Quality of Life Research Center has conducted more than 100 clinical trials in Arizona over its 20-year history. Because of their success, participants may have access to a variety of treatments under study that may not be available to people outside the trial. And participants may receive compensation for study-related time and travel. If you think you'd like to participate in a clinical trial, please visit QLMC.com to view our open trials and express interest.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studios. This time of year, we like to say, you know, you really want to cool off, head over to Silver City, and you're going to get a higher elevation. We're talking 5,000 to 7,000 feet, 3-hour drive approximately from Tucson. It is a great summertime getaway for sure. And a lot to do over there. The Gila National Wilderness is so pretty, and the Gila Cliff Dwellings National Monument. Such a lovely drive from actually Silver City up to the monument. I don't know, it takes about 40 minutes, but it's a beautiful area. Jeff Silvertooth, University of Arizona agronomist, is with me in studio. Jeff, that is a pretty area over there.
It's beautiful. I love it over there. As a matter of fact, you speaking of it here right now makes me...
You're thinking, I'd like to be over there right now in Silver City, where it's going to be about 10 degrees cooler for sure. You can start your planning to take that trip over to Silver City, where it's like 86. That's not bad at all right now, midday. Go to their website, southwestnewmexico.org. Jeff Silvertooth comes on our program every month. I'm glad he does. The Arizona Supreme Court allows Resolution Copper to dump water into Queen Creek. What is the deal with Resolution Copper? This is a copper operation. It's been in the works for decades.
Yeah, that's a large company. Actually, I worked on a project that treated that water about 15 years ago. And what they were doing, I think that article...
The company Rio Tinto.
Rio Tinto yeah. owns Resolution Copper, or vice versa. Uh-huh. And they acquired the mine up by Superior. This is the mine in question. Mm-hmm. And the old mining company had left several open shafts down there. And so these guys with modern technology had discovered there's copper ore way down deep below some of the existing shafts, were like, you know, hundreds of feet deep. And they were deep enough, the ones in question, particularly this one in question, was deep enough that it was bringing in groundwater, pouring in on the sides, but it was water that was hot thermally. And, of course, it was coming through the profiles, the, what we call the vadose zone, the unsat, water been percolating from the surface.
So it was contaminated.
It was hot. Yeah. It was low pH, low pH. It was hot thermally. It was because of the, you know, it's in the Paranos mountain ranges. And the question they had for us, being myself and another chemist from the U of A, Jean-Yves Artiola. So Dr. Artiola and I were asked, what can we do to treat this water? If we get it to a satisfactory level, we could pipe it down and possibly use it in an agricultural area. Mm-hmm. And we said, well, we'd check this out. And several interesting things came from that. First of all, I said, well, how are you going to get this water out? I said, well, we'll pump it out. Well, the water is, you know, like a pH of 1, and it's hot. It's almost to the boiling point. You have pumps that can do it. Oh, I said, oh, yeah, we can do that. So it turns out there's a company in Tucson that makes the pumps they can drop down to actually do that.
Wow.
So we pumped that water out, and then we evolved in a treatment of that water, basically adjust the pH, and, of course, it cooled off. It's had a settling pond, take out some sediments. And then we worked out a deal with the New Magma Irrigation District that's down on there in Pinal County. And not too far away, but the water had to be transported down through a pipeline, and actually went along kind of parallel with part of Queen Creek and went to the New Magma Irrigation District. We tested the water, did some tests to blend it with the irrigation water, and it was successfully implemented. And we checked soils, we checked water, we checked plants for close to 10 years. And another company had picked up that work to do that. But I was really impressed with Rio Tinto and the efforts that they had to do good stewardship. Now, New Magma doesn't need that water, and they're asking, can we just put it into Queen Creek? Mm-hmm. And that's the water in question. So that's a long story behind that. But it's chemically good water, mm-hmm. but it's not hot anymore chemically or physically.
So it's been cleaned up.
It's been cleaned up to a large extent, cleaned up to where we can blend it with irrigation water. So I would think it would be safe to put in. I haven't checked it recently, but based on what our work had shown with Dr. Artiola, that would be a good water to probably inject into the Queen Creek
Another listener is listening to our conversation and wondering why all these companies are from out of the country. I mean, Rio Tinto is from Australia.
Right. Right.
What about U.S. companies? They worry. I wonder why they're all out of, you know.
Good question.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't been part of the mining industry, but when I got into that project,
yeah,
I started working with these folks and realized they're, a lot of these companies, it's kind of like a lot of our electronic technology companies, mm-hmm. they're international,
mm-hmm.
and they're internationally based quite often, not always based in the United States, but they're working, they have subsidiaries in the United States, and they're exploring not just copper, but all kinds of metals around the world. And I was impressed with what they were doing with regard to their efforts to use technology, efforts to use good science, and efforts to try to employ good stewardships while still harvesting these metals, you know, from the earth as their intention is with mining companies. But I saw them as kind of similar to a lot of other large industries, being international in scope.
Colorado River, the latest there, as there's all sorts of the states are, we know the Colorado River states all competing, and now there's a proposal that would track the conserved water. What's that all about?
That's primarily an effort right now driven by the Upper Basin, as I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And the real conflict has come down, you know, you have seven states, United States, two mm-hmm. states in Mexico utilizing that Colorado River water. And it's really divided between the Upper Basin and Lower Basin, which is the dividing point is Lee's Ferry, right just below Lake Powell. And the Upper Basin, Lower Basin right now are the main entities in contention. And a lot of the points of contention go back to the Colorado River Compact in 1922. That compact says that the Upper Basin, Upper Basin states have to deliver 75 million acre feet over a 10-year period. So it comes out to be like 7.5 million acre feet on the average per year. And they've been having a hard time meeting that, particularly in the past 23 years with the drought. And so what they want credit for their conservations in terms of what they're doing to conserve water for the effort to put that water in Lake Powell to deliver to the Lower Basin. And, you know, that's where the main points of contention are right now in terms of working out these new agreements for how we proceed forward after 2026.
The credit would give them presumably then more water.
Right. It would give them credit for saving. It would give them credit towards a 7.5 million acre foot allocation they're supposed to send down the river to the Lower Basin every year. So the Lower Basin has been receiving that 7.5 million acre feet pretty close, or as much as they can, but the Upper Basin contends that they're losing water out of the deal. So they want the credits for this conserved water, essentially, in the budget of the water on the river.
Is August the latest deadline for the Interior Department on the Colorado River to come up with the latest proposals?
In August, for sure,
yeah.
The Bureau of Reclamation, well, they usually come out in August to say, here's what the rules we're going to be operating on
exactly.
for the next year. So we would anticipate this August of 24 to get the operational guidelines that will be employed through the calendar year 2025. Right now, we're in what we call Tier 1 reductions mm-hmm. from the Drought Contingency Plan. We call that the DCP. That was ratified in all the basin states in 2019. Right now, we're under Tier 1, and what that means is Arizona is cutting out 512,000 acre feet of the 2.8 million acre feet allocation we have annually. And right now, the projections are we'll probably still continue in 2025 under Tier 1 based on reservoir levels. Those tier levels, by the way, are triggered by the level of the water at Lake Mead above sea level.
Which has been up a little bit.
Little bit. It's about where we were last year.
It doesn't take long for it to go down, right? If we don't have a very productive summer rainy season or whatever.
Right. I should say it's up a little bit to where it was in 2022 or 2021. So it's down a little bit to where we were last year, but we had a good return year last year because it was a wetter winter.
Mm-hmm. And what about Lake Powell? It's been up a little bit too.
Yes, sir. Lake Powell is up from what it was last year. And so they've had a good return to Lake Powell this past year from the snow melt and from the winter rains and winter precipitation.
Okay. Any final thoughts, Jeff, before we let you go?
Well, I hope that something can work out on this groundwater issue with regard to legislation that we started the conversation
mm-hmm.
with. My understanding is that they're making some progress on that, but your points from your listeners are also well taken with regard to
mm-hmm.
many facets of water conservation we need to be thinking about. But it's an interesting time for us in Arizona in that regard, and I hope we're able to move forward in a positive in a constructive way.
Okay, soon. Jeff, we will look forward to visiting with you in August already.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Hope you have a great week. Thanks, Jeff Silvertooth. All right. On behalf of Professor Silvertooth and John, engineering and producing the show, Bill Buckmaster saying back with you tomorrow on Independence Day Eve. Have a great day.